Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Governor Kristi Noem has a press conference from Pier today at 2 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Mountain. We'll bring you that here on SDPB Radio and on SDPB TV. You can also stream it at SD.net. Meanwhile, mayors and civic leaders across South Dakota have been tasked with preparing for coronavirus as it best fits their city or county. What challenges do they face when making these decisions, and what's the process look like when making those decisions? We're joined now by the mayor of Rapid City, Steve Allender. Mayor Allender, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. Good morning.
All right. It's been a trying time for everyone. How are you feeling, and how are you sort of just, how are people in Rapid City, you know, kind of holding up from a health perspective, and are you keeping yourself safe?
Well, I think we are keeping ourselves as safe as practical. There's definitely an attitude change and behavior change and how people are acting out here. And I think it's good that it's temporary, and it's also good. I think it's helping the keep the spread of the disease at a reasonable rate at the moment.
Let's talk a little bit about authority and responsibility and who makes which calls. Governor Noem issued an executive order and talked about what the guidance should be in cities, and different mayors across the state have responded in different ways. What has your response been, and where do you stand now on whether the state's guidance is strong enough to save as many lives as possible, and where your authority rests? Just expand on that topic first, please.
Sure. Well, I think the governor has the authority to do the most good in a public health crisis. And that may have been in question early on in the mind of our governor. I think now there have been some emergency legislation passed. I don't think the concern is the same. But I hope people can realize and appreciate that cities only get their authority from the state. Without the state, we have no authority whatsoever. And so in most South Dakota municipalities, if there's not an existing state law expressly authorizing cities to do something, then there's no authority to do it. In home rule communities, they have a little broader spectrum of options for exercising local authority. So the person or the entity that gives that authority is the governor. So all the authority rests there. So we have done what we believe can be done legally and practically at this point, with the closing of bars, restaurant dining rooms, recreational facilities. And beyond that, we are recommending social distancing. But as I'm talking to you right now, I'm looking out over Memorial Park in Central Rapid City, and I see a group of individuals sitting on the sidewalk, all in very close proximity to one another. And so there's great examples of how people are practicing social distancing and great examples of how they're not. So as far as authority goes, I think we're cleared up. We're mostly cleared up on that in Rapid City as to where we stand. There are some other communities across the state. They're a little less confident about their authority and have now signed a letter asking the governor to declare a public health emergency in South Dakota.
And that letter came from the South Dakota Municipal League. Did you sign that letter as well, Mayor Allender?
I did. 151 mayors across South Dakota signed it, and nine or 12 county officials signed it. But, and so that was made public today.
So in your opinion, Governor Noem should at this point issue a public health emergency?
I believe she should. One of the good things that happened last week was that the state and the major hospital systems across South Dakota have arrived on the same page as far as the predictive modeling of the coronavirus in South Dakota. And that was a huge step in a state known for doing its own thing from one person to the next. So there's a unified understanding of the disease and then the threat that exists. And the number one goal in South Dakota right now relative to this disease should be preventing our hospital systems from being overrun. And all of the modeling that you see, the numbers of infections and the number of intensive care and estimates of the number of ventilators needed and so on, that's just for COVID-19 patients. That does not take into account the usual medical caseloads that exist in our hospitals where ventilators are needed and emergency procedures and hospital stays are needed. So the number one goal is to keep from overwhelming the system because then the fatality rate will go way higher than it needs to go during the peak infection period. So I think we're,
if the system is overrun, the fatality peak will be higher than necessary than it needed to be, is what you're saying.
It absolutely will, not only from COVID-19, but from things that would not necessarily have to be in that higher fatality rate, you know, the typical cardiac conditions and breathing problems and, you know, cancer and all types of things that are pretty well mitigated normally will go for, in some cases, unchecked because of the lack of resources available.
So when we looked at that modeling and representatives from Monument Health and Avera and Sanford all going to appear to be part of the governor's press conference on Friday, and we saw that, you know, getting, as you say, getting on the same page, you know, for what, you know, what predictive modeling we're using. In the asterisks of, you know, where that curve was and how we were flattening that curve was, you know, if current mitigation techniques are still used, a lot of people were arguing that more could be done and we could flatten that curve even further, but it felt like people were trying to hit that Goldilocks zone of, you know, like how much can we hurt the economy and how many lives can we save? Do you think that the state is doing, and the city, in your city, enough to save as many lives as possible? Could we flatten that curve more?
I think we could flatten the curve more, but I'll tell you one thing I definitely agree with the governor on, and that is that the primary responsibility for personal safety falls on the individual, the primary responsibility, not the cumulative responsibility. But we are all responsible for how we act. We drive safely. We don't walk into traffic. We have a self-preservation instinct that should be speaking to us right now in terms of staying out of crowds of people and not going to typical activities and all of that type of thing. So, you know, it's a very important time right now where the government does its part, the communities do its part, but I think it's predictable that we're going to be coming on a time when there is a real need to start balancing the economic damage being done with the mitigation efforts. For example, to continue to lock down more and more and more will create, among other things, a health crisis with mental health. There's already spikes in mental health incidents and treatment being needed, and poverty is just as threatening to one's health as many diseases. And plus, unfortunately, when the government acts, there's also a political component. So right now, we have good compliance in Rapid City. We have a number of businesses closed by city ordinance, but a number are closed either by corporate decisions or by business owner decisions. So that's all going well, and we're in our second week of that now. So if we go another couple of weeks, there are going to be people who, more and more people who cannot pay bills, who start experiencing more stress, who are, you know, unable to pay for the essentials needed for survival. And politically, they're going to be lobbying towards elected officials to open up or partially open up or do more in the way of getting us back to normal. So I think it's predictable that we could see a partial or metered reopening of businesses even before we're at the peak of this disease, which is going to seem completely counterintuitive to all of us, because academically, you just keep everything closed until the worst of it is past. Well, if that's 2 months down the road, there are a number of problems that will creep up, and I doubt our political ability to keep things closed over a long term. So that's just a reality. I think that we should be talking about when we reopen, how to do so without increasing or reversing all of the positive effects we've seen so far. So that's where the discussions are right now.
What do you know about, you know, when we look at the statewide data, what's going to happen in Rapid City? What's going to happen in your area? Do you have enough supplies? Does Monument Health have enough supplies to handle the surge that you're expecting?
Well, I'll say two things that sound contradictory, but you should expect no less from a politician. One thing is, logically, no, there won't be enough supplies. There won't be enough ventilators. There won't be enough masks, gloves, gowns, all that type of thing, because the supply is not there today. However, this country, this state, and this community have the ability to do great things. And we're already seeing a tremendous community effort to pick up the slack in the supply of those materials. So we have bridge clubs, sewing groups that are doing, you know, making masks. And we have people with 3D printers printing out the reusable masks. And we have a local company here that is reverse engineering and retrofitting a type of respirator that will be better than the N95 medical mask. And so all of these things, we're going to start seeing the benefits of these things very soon. And I think we have the ability then to pick up that slack and to meet the need of our healthcare professionals. I think we'll meet the need. So that's supplies. The other problem we have potentially is the hospital rooms. We're going to need more hospital rooms than we have inventory of right now today in some of our communities. And people think about, oh, Monument Health in Rapid City. Well, Rapid City's population, 77,000 people, and right there is the first mistake. Monument Health does not just treat people from the Rapid City limits or just the metropolitan service area. They treat into Wyoming, part of Nebraska, most of West River. So Monument Health service area is 450,000 people. And so that has to be figured in to the local version of this disease modeling that suggests if we do everything right and if the disease progresses as predicted, we'll run out of rooms and run out of essential equipment near the peak of that spread. So to that extent, Monument is building hospital rooms in some of their partially constructed new facility. They've been remodeling for a couple of years or building on for a couple of years. And they're now building rooms in those new areas, which was not the original plan. And the National Guard's coming out to build space And so we're seeing a lot of, again, a lot of that community effort. And there is a plan to move into off-campus locations and to use surrounding hospitals and other facilities for healthcare. And keeping in mind, this is a very important thing, the predictive modeling that we've seen, that is nothing more than a planning tool. It's not a predetermination of doom on a specific date. That the primary purpose of that is to allow the healthcare professionals to plan appropriately for all of our good.
Do you feel that you are weighing in the balance human lives who could die from everything from COVID-19 to heart attacks and keeping a restaurant open on a daily basis?
No, not today. We're not. I think it's very clear that South Dakota has taken lesser actions than some of the surrounding states. Well, most of the surrounding states. And so I think there's a lot of room there for improvement. But on the other hand, there's also evidence that what we are doing is producing a positive result. But in the end, in the most extreme form of your question, if we save an additional life, but we are in a worse economic collapse than the Depression, then where was there a point of diminishing return? Where do we save one life from the disease but cost a life from the other effects of the ruined economy? So now what I just said was not money should take priority over health. But unfortunately, that's the common reaction to someone talking about keeping the economy going. People need jobs to buy food. There's not enough government money to buy food for everyone. And so we look at some of those parts of the economy that are still going strong, like construction and land development. In fact, we're up from this time last year. And so those employ, you know, 1,000 people in our community, and that's important. So we're not at the point of splitting hairs and deciding what to open at whose risk yet. But I'm just saying logically, and this is a result of my opinion or my lack of confidence in the very system I work in, I think there will be a point when the public demands that these restrictions, even nationwide, be lifted. And that's going to be hard for a citizen government not to listen, at least partially, to what they're saying.
Do you think the economic stimulus package and the increase in unemployment insurance benefits and the paycheck protection program and these things that are arguably mm-hmm. having a rough start in execution and getting money into people's pockets, but do you think in the end those are not enough to sustain the economy in order to save lives for the public health crisis that we're in?
No, I think they will be enough for a time. Because
thousands of more people dying isn't good for the economy either.
No, you're right. And I'm not saying anything to the contrary, but the imposition of, you know, a comparable martial law on a community also causes a number of problems as well as solving them. And so I think it's our job to keep our ear to the ground, keep intelligence gathering with our local healthcare communities and get enough advice and have those timely contacts so that we know how other states who have who will peak before us, how they have recovered. Mm. There'll be a time for us. This is a time for us to protect ourselves right now. And there will come a time when it's our time to recover from the pandemic. And all I'm saying here is I don't believe there's a date on the calendar where we end with one mission and pick up a new mission on the next day. I think there'll be an overlapping of reopening and re-stimulating the economy while the disease is on its way down in the numbers.
So one more
and
thing.
I'm afraid that that'll.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
There's one more thing I want.
I'm afraid that that'll look like we're. Well, sorry. I'm afraid that when we do that, when we start to rebuild, that will appear to be a cold-hearted, money-grubbing, non-caring approach to it. And I think it's really incumbent upon us as government officials to make sure we're making the best decisions with the best information available.
There seems to be scientific consensus and political will that, you know, the more testing that you can do and the more contact tracing that you can do is the sort of way to move forward with an economy and protecting people's health. If you could, in a fantasy world, have universal daily testing of people and rigorous contact tracing, this would be an entirely different story. Do you see in Rapid City, through Monument Health, or through the state of South Dakota, those massive efforts to increase the amount of testing and rapid response testing and contact tracing that would really be needed to make a difference in how we deal with this pandemic? Because we have had time that New York City didn't have. We have had time that, China, South Korea didn't have. But we look to some of those places, and we see how they handled it, and the evidence seems to be clear that the best way to handle it is with massive amounts of testing and vigorous contact tracing.
Right. Yeah, I wish that is a great... fantasy scenario. I wish it were that way. I wish we had warehouses full of testing materials and that they could be used at will. One of the things that I'd like to point out, though, is that South Dakota has today 280 positive tests, but 5,000, more than 5,000 negative tests. And that's after screening procedures where they're trying to isolate the people who are the most likely to be positive before they test them. And so I think that provides a little reassurance that, the lack of testing is not contributing greatly to the spread at the moment. So, and hopefully, as the weeks go on, we'll have access to some better testing, better procedures as far as identifying it. But this is very frustrating for the community. People have sent me messages saying, I know for a fact my father has COVID-19, but he can't get tested. He has had a cough, he's had this, and he has that. He hasn't had a fever, but he has all these other things, and they won't test him, and this is wrong. That's very, very frustrating. People want to be tested on demand when the medical professionals are saying, your father does not fit the profile of the symptoms for COVID-19, so we can't spend this testing material on him when we need it somewhere else. And we also have flu season now, and we have, this is the time where lots of folks are sick. So it is very frustrating. But, and if you had 300 million tests available and you could test every man, woman, and child in the country, then we would know where we're at on that day. But you need another 300 million very shortly down the road to see if anyone else has contracted it. And then we have the young people's response to it as well. I mean, young people may not even know they're sick. They may just have a mild cough and be able to spread the disease without drawing any attention to anyone who would test them. So there's, for every philosophical best case scenario, there's I think nearly an equal philosophical worst case scenario, or a con to the whole argument. But I know this, we're stuck here now with this situation, and there'll be plenty of time for finger pointing after, as far as who dropped the ball or who didn't prepare us. But I think so far South Dakota's done very well in keeping ourselves as healthy as practical.
What do you want to see happen next?
Well, what I want to see happen next is that the governor would declare a public health emergency to let the communities across the state govern appropriately for their individual needs, the community's individual needs and collective needs. And I want us to find hope in all of this dreary information that's out there today. We've all been preconditioned today by the Surgeon General that this week's going to be a horrible week, and that the next 30 days are going to be very important, and so on and so forth. And so I just want our communities to be able to see some light at the end of the tunnel and to fully understand what we, what we're up against here. And for most of us, we've never been up against this before.
Mayor Steve Allender from Rapid City, thank you so much for your time. You're welcome back anytime as this goes forward.
Great. Thanks for having me.